Hello and good afternoon. It's Paul D'Souza, Warren Drow from Sightlines Wealth Management. It's Thursday, May 28th. Warren, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How have you been?
Great, great, thanks. It's been quite a while since our last conversation.
Well, it seems like it. It's been about a week and a half or so. We've kind of changed gears a bit. We've had interviews with other managers. I heard your interview with John Hutchinson from Trust. I think that was well received from the feedback we have.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a very useful interview. It gave our listeners an insight on how Trez actually operates in Texas and what kind of sort of market they're after. It was very encouraging, actually. He gave us some interesting statistics on real estate and so forth.
And most recently with Wayne Agutz as well from Waygar, and that will be sent out to our clients in the next few days. I think that went well.
Yes, I did. I thought that was a good interview as well. I always find Wayne very insightful in what he does and how he does it and the rationale for it. Makes a lot of sense. So I think that'll be enjoyed.
Very good. So let's get back to where we typically begin our conversations, and that's unemployment. I mean, it's a sector, it's something that's been so massively affected due to COVID-19. So are we close to 35 million now unemployed in the United States?
I think it's actually closer to 40. We had today, the number was 2.1 million applied for benefits. We had last week, it was 2.4 million. So it's coming down a little bit. Since the beginning of this COVID virus panic, so to speak, we've had over 48 million apply for benefits. The encouraging thing, though, Paul, is the continuous claims have been falling. So in other words, people have been getting back or going back to work. The reopening is actually happening. The continuous claims fell by 3.86 million to 21.05, and it was down from the previous week of 24.9. So the unemployment rate, as quoted, I think this morning, was 14.7% in April. So that's a fairly significant increase in the unemployment, obviously, from where we came anyway.
I guess what's a bit surprising is as states are beginning to open up, that number still rose, and thought we would see a bit of a reversal perhaps next week.
Yeah, the number applying for benefits is declining, but yeah, I agree with you. I would expect that with the reopening that would have, at some point you've laid off everybody you can lay off. You kind of wonder where that point is. I would, continue to see that number decrease.
Right. So let's go to the markets now where the S&P, which is interesting because many feel or felt that it was a broad-based, snapshot of the overall economy, but it's largely led by five stocks, has now passed its 200-day moving average. And that's considered for a lot of bulls now a very positive sign. And I'm still in a bit of disbelief as to the dichotomy between what's happening on Main Street versus Wall Street. And I'm not alone there. And I think, we've said all along, it doesn't feel right. Although the market just continues to go higher, which is frustrating. It's frustrating a lot of managers, frustrating value managers. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, in talking with value managers, you're quite right. The market has really been focused. The increase in the market has been focused on a handful of companies. And the majority of the companies, if you were to look at the S&P 500, has rebounded quite nicely, but again, it's just driven by a very small number of companies. Whereas you look at a broader base market like the Russell 1000 or 3000, you'll notice it hasn't rebounded quite as much. So if you look at the sort of a more, take a broader view of the economy and the companies that comprise the economy, they have not rebounded. Even though a large number of those companies are doing well, they're actually making money, they're earning money. Talking to value investors, they see lots of opportunity out there. There's lots of good stories. They just have to wait for a catalyst to come along to show an increase or an interest anyway in their stocks before they take off. So it's been said, I think we've said before here, Paul, that the Dow, which of course has been on a tear, over 25,000 as we sit here, 25,400 is more of a domestic market, whereas the S&P 500 is more of a international market. Mm-hmm. And I guess if you looked at the broader base markets, they'd be more domestic in a way as well, because they represent so many smaller, mid to small cap companies in that index.
Now, something that I've been following in the latest news is the number of accounts and the trading activity, the option speculation, and the size of the trades have been quite small. And it's leading many to believe that this is the individuals at home, bored in their sweatpants, gambling in the stock market. In addition, sports obviously has been canceled for the time being. So they've gone from betting on sports to now betting on these stocks. And I find that fascinating. And I don't know if that's largely driving this. I don't believe, it's hard to believe that crowd could actually lift the markets in this regard. However, the volume, could lead some actual validity to that, is because the volumes are still about a third of what they were pre-crisis. So I'm inclined to actually go with that theory, because the volume would confirm that the larger players and institutions are not in it yet. Well, fully, we'll say.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. I mean, if you recall, at the end of the year, last year in January, we had a big move in the market. A lot of that was attributed to major pension plans rebalancing because they, you know, were out of line from the 2019. So they had to rebalance and reallocate to different asset classes. I'm kind of curious to see what happens in June. Certainly that didn't seem to happen at the end of March. And maybe it should have happened at some level, because obviously equities were significantly down at the end of March. And that would have normally, under normal conditions, might have suggested a move into equities from fixed income to rebalance the portfolios. So I don't know how much of that actually happened, or even if it happened, but certainly based on the volumes, you'd have to assume that the smaller players are mm-hmm. driving the market right now. Mm-hmm. And as you say, there's nothing else to do at home, so why not bet on the market? Let's open up a trading account and have some fun while we sit at home. So it could very well be the case.
Could be it. And as you know, we've often said, the men investors are aware, the markets are very forward-looking, and you just have to feel that how quickly this has rebounded. They're looking very forward, very far forward. And so it almost feels like, is this the return for the rest of the year? And then we get sideways action, volatility. There's the elections coming up. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I was listening to a commentator this morning interviewing a money manager in the U.S. And, you know, his take on it was, and I'm inclined to agree with it, that one, the optimism is based on the reopening of business in the U.S., number one. Number two, based on the optimism that we're probably going to have a vaccine within the year end or possibly early next year. Number three really is, point three was central bank liquidity has been provided in the system. The central banks globally have responded very rapidly to the markets. And the other thing that really has helped valuations is, we don't think of maybe as often as we should, is the interest rate. Interest rates are incredibly low. As a result, mm-hmm. there's no money generated there. And when you're doing an analysis on a company, you factor in interest rates. And of course, the lower the interest rate, the higher the possible valuation. So the historic PE at 15 times is more likely going forward. What are we faced with going forward? It could be an environment where we have stagflation, much like we did back in the 70s. So we have higher unemployment, we have slow economic growth, and we have inflation. So and that can make some sense, given the fact that I think we're going to be in a transitional economy with, obviously, there's been a significant impact on how we socialize. There's going to be an impact on certain businesses and how they operate. For example, entertainment, restaurants, and so forth and so on. There's going to be new standards there with the social distancing. Certain sectors and certain industries are going to be maybe even go out of business permanently. I think there's going to be certain industries, essential service industries are going to be coming back, or manufacturing is going to be coming back to North America, because I think people will want the supply chains to be closer to home. So I think, you know, the fact that we're 80% of service economy, there's going to be significant changes and adjustments going forward. Commercial real estate with office buildings and so forth and so on, people will be using less office space because we can do things more virtual now. We've become used to it over the last couple of months, and people are finding productivity levels are certainly, in some cases, are going up quite nicely. So there's this period of adjustment that's going to take some time, but we'll get through it. But in the meantime, there'll be volatility in the markets. And I think you're quite right. I think coming into the fall, there's going to be a lot more volatility based on, as a result of the U.S. elections. No matter which way it goes, there'll be some volatility.
What's the total amount of stimulus provided year to date for the crisis? Is it 6 trillion, 8 trillion?
You know what? I don't.
I'm looking at
actually know the total of it.
I'm looking at a chart here, and it looks like it's roughly the same for the Eurozone and the U.S. We have the liquidity bank injections, almost 5 trillion, and then there's government fiscal stimulus, which is, just as effective. We have about 8 trillion, which is 37% of GDP. And same thing in the Eurozone, Japan, UK, Canada. And so with the rates at current low, again, we've referred to this, we're just reminding everyone, the bullets are in the chamber, or this gun is empty of bullets. So what's left to do? The market obviously thrives on this morphine, or this Botox, or this cortisone liquidity injections. And so what happens when it's not present? Again, so I think this is what's concerning. So,
well, I think you're right. It is concerning, but I think that, you know, I think they just keep printing money to keep this thing alive. And I think that's what they've been doing, and they'll continue to do. It was interesting. I saw a statistic the other day that said 2/3 of the workers in the U.S. have been receiving benefits, are making more on benefits than they were when they were working. And that number that's compounding is going to keep growing until the benefit ends. Mm-hmm. They've got to get people back to work somehow. I'm not sure how they do that, but at some point they have to return to work. Mm-hmm. So the stimulus, you know, whatever the trillions of dollars are today, it's just going to keep growing the way we're at from where it is.
In Warren Buffett's Berkshire Annual investor meeting, he was asked at a shareholder meeting, he was asked about low rates, and he was quoted, "If you are going to have negative rates and pour money out and incur more and more debt relative to productive capacity, you would think the world would have discovered this in the first 1,000 couple of years rather than coming on it now." And I don't know if we discussed this in our last meeting, but if I did, apologies. I think it's so important to hear is that it's not a panacea. If it's so wonderful, then why haven't we done it all along? It's a very desperate act.
You're right. It is desperate. And I think these people are fighting for their political lives, quite frankly. I think they've made some terrible mistakes in the past, and it's all coming together, unfortunately, at this time. Right. They haven't learned the lesson.
Well, this ZIRP policy and NERP policy in terms of zero interest rate policy or negative interest rate policy, it is a war on savers. It's a war on investors. Investors are now chasing yields. They're getting into riskier assets, investing in the market in hopes of return, just because yields are so low. And so it is a massive issue for many investors, and I think one that I think we're grateful to have some of the private managers that we have in some of our products, because it offers investors these yields without, you know, very competitive yields with being in a senior secured position.
Yeah, it seems that this is offering or presenting an opportunity for us. Certainly the banks are leaving a lot of borrowers high and dry, not providing liquidity for them for whatever reason. And so it's creating a new marketplace out there. And a lot of these businesses, as I said earlier, these small to mid-sized businesses are actually doing quite well. They're actually making money. They're essential services and so forth, and they need funding. So we have aligned ourselves with some private debt managers that are there to provide the liquidity that these companies need. And typically it's short-term liquidity requirements, right? That's been very positive.
In terms of undervalued assets, just looking at a chart with a Goldman Sachs commodity index to the S&P, the ratio hasn't been this low in 50 years, where it's typically the medium is around 4. And I think it's at currently at 0.5.
And yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, I think, yeah, we have a bifurcated market, obviously. And there are some wonderful opportunities out there. I was talking to a value manager not long ago. And one of the things he said to me was he typically finds the best opportunity is small to mid-cap market. And he said the problem with it is that most of the investors today are looking at the big stocks. And his stocks no longer have coverage by the investors. And from an institutional point of view, institutions aren't interested in these small to mid-cap stocks because they don't have enough cap size for them to invest. So, and the retail investor, quite frankly, doesn't get exposed to these opportunities because they don't have an advisor or they don't have a broker who follows these stocks. So there are lots of opportunities out there in undervalued situations, but it's very difficult. And then again, when does that value get realized? Who cares about a stock that's trading at, you know, $20, $30 that has a cap size of, say, $500 million? No one's interested.
It almost seems like if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, it's very similar, doesn't it? Where we have these fantastic companies now with no coverage, the value will not be unlocked. And so what does that force managers to now invest only in stocks that are covered? The momentum investing, the greater fool theory, you're buying at a high price and hopefully selling to someone else at a higher price?
Seems to be the case.
Yeah.
Seems to be the case.
Okay. Well, I think that should wrap up for this week. Any closing thoughts?
No, I just expect to continue to see, you know, as we work our way through April, the economic news will continue to be somewhat negative. As the economy reopens, I would think that like the employment numbers and so forth will, people applying for benefits and so forth will start declining as they have most recently. And there'll be very, very slow improvement. But in the meantime, based on, you know, we've got all kinds of geopolitical issues to deal with, there'll be increased volatility, or I should say volatility, not increased volatility, but volatility. And I guess we just have to be patient and let this thing, you know, let the market digest all this news.
Excellent. Thanks for your time. We'll talk next week.
Okay. Very good, Paul. Have a good one.
You as well.